Case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Brown against Louisiana. I think you may proceed when you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice.
Mr. Lawrence, you may raise the lectern if you wish. Toward you, we'll raise it.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. The issue in this case is whether to apply the court's ruling in Birch versus Louisiana, that a verdict of 5 out of 6 on a bobtail jury should be applied retroactively to this case. And if so, if any other cases are involved, that whether it should be full retroactivity or limited retroactivity to cases pending but not yet final at the time that Birch was decided. Darnell Brown was convicted in Orleans Parish of simple burglary by a 5-1 vote. He was then multiple billed and sentenced to serve 22 years. We are relying on the rule in Hankerson versus North Carolina as the rule to apply in this case. Similarly, we are relying on the rule in Witherspoon in Ballou versus Georgia, as well as Birch versus Louisiana.
In what case did we define the, or at least try to give some guidelines on retroactivity?
In Stovall versus Deno, where the guidelines came out, the criterion to apply. In Ballou versus Georgia, the statistics came out. And in Birch, the 5 out of 6 decision was made. But in Stovall and later with Linkletter, the court drew on 3 factors: the purpose to be served by the new rule, the reliance in good faith by the state authorities on the old rule, and the effect on the administration of criminal justice by implementing the new rule. In Hankerson, the court looked to the purpose of the new rule, and that if that purpose was to enhance the truth fact-finding matter, then you need not look to reliance and effect. And that if the purpose was only to incidentally enhance the truth-finding function, or if it was small, then you would consider the other factors. And we submit here that we are in a better position than the litigant in Hankerson, because we're not concerned with just an incidental enhancement of the truth-finding function. If you will recall in Ballou, when the statistics were mentioned, Zeisel statistics and Leipert statistics were mentioned, they talk about prevention of type 1 error, which is that an innocent man should not be wrongfully convicted, being weighed 10 times more heavily than the prevention of a type 2 error, that a guilty person should go free.
Was that this court's?
That was in Ballou, that came out of Ballou from the statistics that the court considered in making its decision.
But was it this court's statement that it should be a 10-to-1 ratio?
No, that is not this court's statement. That is the statistics from Likert. But the fact remains that the enhancement here is not incidental or small, that the unanimity requirement, where do you draw the line? The unanimity requirement in a bobtail jury is where you draw the line. Whether it's 6 of 6 or 5 out of 6, as in the case of Brown. Now, when you look at the reliance by state authorities, after Ballew and Williams versus Florida, they were put on notice that unanimity was being favored and not 5 out of 6 anymore. That's the reason that the motion to quash the five out of six panel requirement was filed. The purpose also in Birch was to assure accuracy in jury verdicts, to overcome an aspect of the criminal trial that substantially impaired the truth-finding function and raised serious doubts about prior trials where 5 out of 6 would convict someone. That's the reason for Ballew and Birch. So here we're on similar ground with Hankerson, that the purpose of Birch is to enhance the fact-finding process, but if the court would look at the other factors, such as the reliance and the effect on the administration of justice, you should consider this, that we're talking about really two states here, Louisiana and Oklahoma, who had the 5 out of 6 requirement. Most of the people who were convicted 5 of 6 have already served their sentences and are out of prison. Some people who've been multiple billed or not, but most of the people who were convicted are already out. We're talking about a period of time between 1974 and 1978. And we're not talking about people charged with relative felonies who pled guilty or who were convicted 6-0. We're talking only about 5-1. So there's a relatively small number of people that we're talking about here.
Why wouldn't it you think Ballew was the 5-man, wasn't it?
Yes. Ballew said that the verdict by 5 was illegal.
Wouldn't you have argued that was retroactive?
That Ballew was retroactive? I'm afraid I don't understand your question.
Well, what about people who before Ballew had been convicted by 5? Would they be out under Ballew?
That was a unanimous group. The inner workings of the jury was a unanimous group there.
I understand.
And prior to 1974, when we tried these cases where we had the 5-man jury, it was a unanimous requirement.
Well, are you arguing for retroactivity back behind Ballew?
No.
Just back to Ballew?
That's right.
And you think that would not have, that since Ballew was 70?
Ballew was in 78. Birch was in 78.
Well, so you're just, so aren't you, you must be arguing for the retroactivity of Ballew then.
Well, Ballew only had 5 people on the jury.
I understand.
And in this decision, we're talking about 5 people mm-hmm. convicting out of 6. Mm-hmm. And Birch came after Ballew.
Yes.
So I would argue that any retroactivity, yes, I'm sorry, also include the cases in Ballew. Yes,
yes
back to 1974.
Are there any statistics as to numbers that would be affected?
There are not. There's no Louisiana agency that has these figures. And what I'm trying to show the court here is that we are talking about a small number of people. In the these are relative felonies, small crimes where the legislature has not seen fit to give more significance to the number of people needed to convict. And
Of course, there are two elements, really, in the jury composition. You say it's the truthfulness of the fact-finding process, but many of our recent decisions going down in numbers of jurors have emphasized the necessity of the cross-section and that you have to draw an arbitrary line to preserve a right to jury trial without ever suggesting that a bench trial by a single judge is not an accurate truth-finding process.
Well, we're not talking here about the right to a jury trial or a judge trial. We're talking here about the inner workings of a jury. After you've made that decision to go before a group of people between the defendant and the prosecutor, we're talking about that and not the right to a jury or a judge. Once we get into the inner workings of the jury, the 5 of 6 or the 6 of 6, the unanimity requirement, it's a different matter.
Which do you say is the better truth-finding process? A jury of 5, which must be unanimous, or a jury of 6, in which the conviction may be had by 5 out of 6?
I would have to draw my own prior experience before 1974. And I will be very candid with the court in telling the court that at that time, I favored 5 out of 5, unanimity. But I'm not going to argue with the requirement now of 6. But I didn't. I never favored the 5 out of 6.
My question is, which do you think is the likely to be the more accurate truth-finding process?
Unanimity, 6 out of 6.
That isn't my question. My question is, unanimity with 5 or non-unanimity with 6?
I see no difference in
it. You see no difference?
I see no difference in the except that you may be dealing with one person if you have a 5 out of 6 situation that you would not be dealing with if you had a 5 out of 5. But I certainly don't want to argue with the requirement now that 6 out of 6 for unanimity.
With the 6 and non-unanimity, you have at least a challenger in the jury room.
If you will
see some advantage of that, to the truth?
If there is an advantage to it, then I would recall that in Ballou they talk about the 5 factors of when you're dealing with a small jury, the lack of discussion that goes on, that the minority viewpoint may not be adhered to, and that the position of the defense is to some detriment when you have a small jury.
Well, Ballou was simply a line-drawing process, wasn't it?
There was one line, yes.
You can't... there's nothing magic about 5 or 6 or 7, except that the court concluded a line had to be drawn somewhere.
And it already upheld the 6 line.
That's right. Unanimity.
That's the only requirement of line drawing, is because the 6-person jury had been upheld.
That's correct. Now, in our situation, our case was pending on review in the Louisiana Supreme Court at the time Birch was decided. And we raised the issue by motion to quash after Ballou came out. And
why do you say we're only talking about going back to 74?
Prior to 1974, in our state, the statute provided for a 5-man jury.
And so the 5 out of 6 thing could only have been happening since then.
Since 1974 through 1978.
Has the retroactivity of Ballou been decided?
No.
Well, this one would certainly decide it, wouldn't it?
Yes, it should.
So you're really not talking about just back to 74.
As I understand it, if there are other states who have
Well, you're at least talking about it in Louisiana and Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
You're talking about anybody who's still in jail, who's been convicted by either a five-man jury or by a five-out-of-six jury.
If they're still in jail.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Lawrence, do you know what the maximum sentence that could have been imposed for conviction by a five-man jury? Wasn't it generally for rather minor offenses that it was?
Yes, it was for minor offenses, what they call relative felonies, where you could get not necessarily at hard labor, but...
Would any of them provided for a sentence of in excess of 6 years?
At that time, the sentence provided for a nine-year.
Oh, well, there wasn't 9 year maximum.
9 years maximum.
What was the sentence in this case?
22 years.
In this case, there was a multiple bill filed, and he got 22 years.
And that's not unusual.
Not with people convicted in Orleans Parish with prior criminal records, no.
Well, what is the maximum you could have been sentenced to by a five-man jury prior to 74 in the case of a repeater?
18 years on a double bill, and 18 years on a...
So there may be quite a few people in jail still who were convicted prior to 74 by a five-man jury.
If they were multiple bills.
Yes.
And if they were in Orleans Parish.
Mm-hmm.
But if they were outside of Orleans Parish, in the other parishes, probably not.
Well, what is your answer to Justice White's question? Is it likely that there are quite a few people in jail? Your answer was, if they were subjected to a multiple bill, I think what he's asking is, were there very many subjected to multiple bills, as you call them?
Let me explain it this way. In 1974, there was a new policy for multiple billing that came into effect. And after that, there was a denial of good time that came into effect. And I believe in 1977. Now, the people sentenced before that got benefit of good time and probably are not in jail. People from, say, 77 on are likely to be in jail under multiple bills.
Even someone who was sentenced to 22 years might, in 1976, say, might be out now?
If they were multiple billed in 1976, say, 76 or back to 1974, during that period of time, their good time would not be affected by the multiple billing. And whatever their sentence would be from zero or from a third of the maximum, which would be 3 years, which most of them received, three to the maximum of 18 on a multiple bill at that time, they would be out of jail. Now, if they received the heavy end of the sentence on the multiple bill, they may still be there. But again, this applies to Orleans Parish and not to most of the other parishes in the state.
What's the population of Orleans Parish?
Over a million.
Over a million.
Over a million.
That's just by practice, not by law.
That is by practice.
Mm-hmm. Could I go back to the question asked by the Chief Justice? I think the question was, which do you regard as possessing the greater integrity, a jury verdict of unanimous with five or divided with six? And you said you couldn't detect any difference. You still feel that way? Even though there is, as the Chief suggested...
You have the wild card, but I would like to just draw my own experience when I tried cases at that time. I feel that a unanimous verdict is always preferable, but that if you limit me to five or five or five out of six, and I would, for the sake of this argument, say I would prefer to have five out of six. But since we're dealing here with the new rule in Birch that has thrown this out and requires six of six, then I would, of course,
you
feel that six of six is much better because it's unanimous and does not have a wild card.
Now, do you respond that way because of you see some advantage in having a challenger in the jury room who's in effect perhaps going to make the Other five jurors think a little longer?
It depends. It's a two-edged sword, Chief Justice Berger. It could also affect a not guilty verdict. But as far as the guilty verdicts, I really have to draw my own experience again. Sometimes it did work to our advantage.
We're dealing with a lot of imponderables. For example, you'd rather have one strong-willed juror on your side than eight weak-minded ones on the other side, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we get in trouble with the figures.
There's no doubt.
I think I understand your problem, but isn't that what your problem is?
No doubt about that. I would like to see all these cases tried by 12-member juries, but since we're talking about the small juries, then we are limited to that factor.
Well, wouldn't 24 be even better from your point of view?
From our viewpoint, yes, it would.
36?
Yes.
That's always it.
If I had my choice to try it that way, I'd do it.
You remember?
I'm
sorry, I didn't understand.
So you have it close to that in the Fifth Circuit these days when you sit in bank, don't you?
But the Fifth Circuit can decide a case 13 to 12.
And they're presumably questions of law, too.
That's true. I have only to say that I would ask the court to, if there are no more questions, to reverse the holding of the state Supreme Court and to apply retroactively.
May I ask another question? This case, as I understand it, involves a conviction which had not yet become final.
That's correct.
At the time Birch was decided. Do you happen to know if there are proceedings attacking collaterally final convictions on the basis of Birch in the Fifth Circuit?
I'm aware that they're doing that now, yes.
That is.
Thank you.
You say you're aware that that is going on?
Well, I have.
I just didn't understand your
again,
answer.
I'm drawing on my experience with correspondence with people who have been convicted and are in the parish prison or at this time,
I didn't really need an embellishment to your answer. I didn't hear your answer.
I would say that there are, those are underway, yes.
You're aware that that is going on?
Yes.
That was your answer. Thank you.
Could I ask you in the state's brief on page 27, it says, in the case of habitual felons, a conviction by a six-member jury can ultimately result in a sentence of life imprisonment.
That's if he has four felony convictions.
Well, anyway, it can happen.
From 20 to life.
Well, it can happen, and then he could have a sentence for life and be convicted by five out of six.
Right. I believe, yes, that's correct. That, to my knowledge, has not happened.
How do you tell when a verdict has been unanimous with a six-man jury?
At the end of the trial, you ask for a poll of the verdict.
What if the poll wasn't taken?
They take it in open court, right?
It isn't required, is it?
It is not required, and sometimes does not go into the court record.
So how do you ever know?
We don't. We ask the jury.
Well, I know, but once the trial's over, how would you ever know?
And if there's no poll taken, you would not know.
And in some instances, if there is a poll taken, I take it it doesn't necessarily show up on the court minutes.
It may be recorded by the stenographer, but it is not usually made part of the record. It can be, but usually the poll is taken, the number is given, and that's it. There's no further action on it.
You and your defender practice routinely ask for a poll?
Yes, unless I have the advantage, and then I don't.
Do most defense lawyers do that?
Yes, as a matter of practice, they do. In any of the verdicts they do, whether it's 5 out of 6 or 12 out of 12 or whatever.
An acquittal, is there a poll?
I would never ask for one.
I know you wouldn't. No. I know you wouldn't, but is there one?
Sometimes the state does, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes. Thanks.
Mr. Chester?
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. Respondent, State of Louisiana, would suggest to the court that Birch versus Louisiana should be applied prospectively only for three reasons. First is that Petitioner Darnell Brown has failed to establish that serious and substantial doubts exist as to the accuracy of non-unanimous verdicts before the time of Birch. Second, the state of Louisiana conducted numerous jury trials before this court ruled in Birch, in good faith reliance on what the law was earlier. And third, the contrary ruling would have a seriously disruptive impact on the administration of justice in Louisiana.
Well, don't you think, at least think that Ballou heralded Birch?
No, I don't, Your Honor. The state's position is this. That first of all, in Birch, there was no...
It wouldn't make much difference, would it?
No, sir. I believe that relevant tests could be applied to these two cases and differing results could
but
occur.
They weren't far apart.
I believe there are differences.
But how far apart were they in time?
About a year. I believe Ballou was decided in 78 and Birch was decided in 79.
So in terms of impact on justice, it won't, even if Birch were retroactive back to Ballou, it wouldn't make that much difference.
If Birch were retroactive back to Ballou, I believe there would be a substantial number of jury trials having been tried in an interim period, approximately 1 year. The court asked Mr. Lawrence how many persons would be affected. The Orleans Parish District Attorney's Office, in the 4 years that non-unanimous jury verdicts were law, tried approximately 300 cases. This is for just the city of New Orleans, not counting the other parishes in the state.
But you have to be able to estimate how many of those were non-unanimous.
No way, Your Honor. I imagine the you could go back to each particular record and look and see if a poll had been requested. And if a poll had been requested, whether the verdict or the count had been recorded. As the state pointed out in its brief, it has been the practice of some judges to merely examine the ballots that the individual jurors fill out and then announce for the record whether or not the verdict was lawful.
No numbers at all.
Not necessarily, Your Honor. Not necessarily.
Minus an unknown number of unanimous cases, and again, minus an unknown number of cases which the record is unclear.
Yes, sir. For the parish of Orleans alone, not for the entire state of Louisiana.
But I gather from your opponent, although maybe I didn't get it right, that that's probably where the problem is most likely to occur. Is that right? There are more trials using this particular procedure. Is that wrong?
No, I believe that the procedure would have been the same all through the state. The parish of Orleans does have a disproportionate amount of jury trials because it has a much more serious crime problem than some of the country parishes do.
What's the population of the state of Louisiana?
Your Honor, I'm not sure, but I know that the population of the city of New Orleans is about 500,000.
Well, do you have any idea of the population of the state as a whole, 3 or 4 million?
I think what Your Honor is getting at is about what proportion of jury trials in the state were held in New Orleans. I would say it'd be roughly a third to a quarter.
What I was getting at was what the population of the state of Louisiana is, but...
yes, sir. But from talking with people in the Department of Corrections, I understand that about a third to a quarter of their inmates come from New Orleans.
Let's go back up a minute.
Yes, sir.
About the other people now in jail who might be affected.
Yes, sir.
Do I understand you to say that practically none of them can show that there was a...
No, I don't know if that would be a correct statement of the situation, Your Honor. However, I believe there would be a substantial number who could not show.
So there wouldn't be many who could show.
There would be some, but not all.
Well, all of your friend's clients would be in the other category because he said he polls the jury on every guilty verdict.
Yes, sir. Some defense attorneys always poll a jury. Others do not. It's not required by law.
Just to clear up any possible misunderstanding, I noticed one of the briefs recites that Ballou was 1975, which struck some of us as being...
No, that's incorrect. It's 78. Yes, sir. As I was saying, Petitioner Brown was convicted by one of these non-unanimous juries in 1978 in August, about 9 months before this court decided Birch. As a habitual felon, he received a sentence of 22 years, which I'd submit to the court is not a minor sentence. Mr. Brown had been convicted about 6 or 7 times previously. After he was convicted, he appealed his sentence and his conviction. This is affirmed by the Louisiana Supreme Court in May of 1979. The particular record in this case certainly fails to reflect any miscarriage of justice as to petitioner Darnell Brown. The record reflects that Brown was arrested inside of a ransacked residence, that he tried to flee at the arrival of police.
Is that the issue here, whether there's any miscarriage of justice?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that the ultimate issue in this case is whether whether non-unanimous jury verdicts are inaccurate, are unjust, if there's a good chance that they're erroneous. In this particular case, there's not. The gist of what petitioner argues, therefore, is that in a substantial number of cases, there must be error to justify a wholesale and a windfall reversal of prior convictions, a substantial number of prior convictions. The state concedes that there's no question that the Sixth Amendment that was the subject of Birch versus Louisiana pertains to what's been called the fact-finding process by this court. But would submit also that it's well settled that the mere fact that the Sixth Amendment or the fact-finding process is involved in a particular ruling does not mandate automatic retroactivity. Since it would be improper and impossible to review all the convictions and the records of all the convictions, we have to look at this issue in general terms from what the jurisprudence has taught us about the jury trial and its functions. The purpose of the jury trial is to prevent government oppression. The main feature of the jury trial is an interposition between accused and accuser of what this court has called the common sense deliberations of a group of laymen. The court has further ruled that this interposition can operate if the jury can deliberate effectively and if it fairly represents a cross-section of the community from which it's been taken. Many of these features are functions of the absolute size of a jury rather than the composition of the final ballot. For example, it's been established that by impaneling 6 jurors, the cross-section requirement is satisfied. And I believe the court has rejected the argument that the fact that a member of a minority group is ultimately outvoted does not indicate that his position was not, or the position of the minority group was not adequately represented during the jury deliberations. The court in Ballew expressed some concern about the collective memory of the jury. And I think it's been further established that when 6 persons are impaneled, they are able, when they go back to that deliberation room, to remember all the facts and arguments that were important in the trial of the case. Also, the state would suggest that it can't be said that a lay body has failed to interpose itself between accused and accuser, whether the final verdict is unanimous or non-unanimous. Reading Birch together with this court's prior decisions suggests that while a unanimous jury verdict may indicate that a more perfect deliberation process has occurred, that the extent to which non-unanimous jury verdicts infect the integrity of the fact-finding process ranks low on the scale of probabilities. The language of the Birch decision supports this. The majority opinion of Mr. Justice Rehnquist at several points noted that the case was a close one, but went on to state that it was necessary to draw lines, that demarcation lines had to be drawn at some point if the substance of the trial was to be preserved. The state of Louisiana would liken the rule of Birch to the rule of O'Callaghan versus Parker, as interpreted in Gosa versus Maiden, and that is that it's a prophylactic rule, that it only incidentally enhances the reliability of the fact-finding process.
So you would argue that even if Ballew were retroactive, Birch is not?
Yes, sir. I believe that there are several...
That Ballew did say that there's a real danger of reliability.
Yes, sir, it did.
But you think that is not the basis for
Birch? Well, I think that,
that's not the basis for Birch?
I think that the major difference between the two cases is that the prior jurisprudence, up until the time of Birch, talks more in terms of the absolute size of the jury, representation of the community.
Well, Ballew said that
five persons really raised a substantial doubt about not only the composition and representational nature of the jury, but about its reliability of its verdicts.
Yes, sir, and I believe that some of the facts.
And you think Birch said the same thing?
No, sir, I don't. I believe Birch was more of a line drawing decision. I think that some of the features of the jury trial are more perfectly represented in a non-unanimous 6-member jury than they are in a 5-member jury. Those are particularly the cross-section of the community, the jury's ability to remember, and certain other factors.
But you don't feel that the illegality of in Birch of a 5-out-of-6 verdict rested on the danger of unreliability?
I believe that was a factor in the case, but I believe it was a factor in the case, but I don't believe that was the reason for the whole decision. I believe it was a line-drawing decision, and I think that was noted in the opinion several times. The state would further submit that the court's rulings in DiStefano versus Woods and Gosa versus Maiden are dispositive of the issue before the court. In both of these cases, the court denied retroactive application to cases where jury trials had been denied outright, where the purpose of the Sixth Amendment as it relates to trial had been frustrated entirely.
DiStefano against Woods held Duncan against Louisiana.
Duncan and Bloom not to be retroactive, Your
and
Honor.
And what did Gosa against Maiden hold?
That was a case which interpreted O'Callaghan as not being retroactive, O'Callaghan being a decision as to the military versus civil trial.
Right.
If the state's position is if these cases are not retroactive, then Birch versus Louisiana should not be retroactive because although I haven't prepared an argument as to Blue, Your Honor, I think that if you applied the same test, the DiStefano, Stovall three-prong balancing test, I think you'd find also that Blue should not be retroactive. You're talking in terms of reliance on prior jurisprudence, prior law, you're talking about impact on the administration of justice. I think that when these factors are balanced against the purpose of both of the decisions, the ultimate ruling should be that they are prospective only. However, I think that the case is stronger in Birch for a prospective application than it is in Ballou, because I believe that Birch was not as grounded in fairness as Ballou was. I believe Birch had other justifications and other reasons for the Birch decision.
On the other hand, Mr. Chester, in the Blue-type case, the proof would be very simple. We'd know, I guess everybody who's convicted there has a claim, whereas in the Birch-type case, a large percentage may not have a claim.
Exactly, Your Honor.
So that may argue for making
could be
the other way.
Both ways.
Yeah.
Now, as I spoke earlier, once we've established that the rule with which we're dealing is not so grounded in fundamental fairness as is, say, the right to counsel or reasonable doubt, like in Hankerson versus North Carolina, then it becomes appropriate to apply countervailing factors to the analysis, factors that were first set out in Linkletter, later in Stovall and those cases progeny. As to the reliance of the state of Louisiana, the relevant inquiry before the court is should the state be charged with having anticipated the court's ruling in Birch, and the state would submit that it should not. First, we're dealing with an institution which was provided for by the Louisiana Constitution. This is not a jurisprudential rule. It's not merely a statutory rule. And normally, the constitutions of the states are presumed to have some validity. The jurisprudence of this court, as I said earlier, has seemed to examine the composition of the jury question in terms of absolute number rather than in terms of the final vote. The issue involved in Birch had not raised long and widespread attacks in the lower courts, as did the court's Fifth Amendment decision in Bruton, which was made retroactive by Roberts versus Russell. And further, I don't believe that the court's decision in Birch can be said to have been foreshadowed or preordained, as had been the Confrontation Clause rule of Barber versus Page by this court's previous decision in Pointer versus Texas. And finally, again, Birch, by its own terms, at several points, noted that the issue was a close one. As to the impact on the administration of justice, the third factor, which was identified in Stovall, is noted in the state's brief. A number of serious felonies have been traditionally tried by juries, tried by non-unanimous six-member juries. This institution, incidentally, was in effect for a little bit over 4 years, from January 1, 1974 until the date of Birch. Crimes such as aggravated battery, possession of narcotics, burglary, forgery, theft, possession of stolen property are among the most common prosecutions that are held in the criminal courts in the state of Louisiana and probably anywhere.
Before this system, you had, six-member juries or unanimous or five-member?
Before this system, before 1975, it was 5 out of 5 to convict for felonies which were not necessarily punishable by hard labor.
And that's precisely what was held invalid in Ballou.
In Ballou, exactly, Your Honor.
Georgia.
The difference being that in Georgia, I believe that the maximum sentence for a 5 out of 5 conviction in Georgia was 1 year, whereas in Louisiana it would have been 9,
mm-hmm.
Possibly being enhanced by the multiple offender statute. Prior to 1975 and after 1975, potentially a man that had prior felony convictions, as had petitioner Darnell Brown, could be possibly be sentenced to up to life in prison.
Wouldn't you think that if Birch were held to be retroactive, a for sure, Ballou would be?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I believe that Birch is a stronger case for prospective application than Ballou is.
And Louisiana had the unanimous five-member jury for a long time, did it?
Yes, sir. The 1921 Constitution.
In the 1921 Constitution.
Yeah, I'm not sure what type of jury was before that.
Do you have no figures or no idea how many people might still be in jail who were convicted by five-member juries prior to 1975?
I don't know how many of those people would still be in jail, Your Honor. I know between 74 and 75, the Department of Corrections estimates that there are about 2,000 people currently in jail who were either convicted, pled guilty, or either convicted by a judge or a jury, or who pled guilty. So you're talking about 2,000 people who were convicted.
If you just took 80%, you really get guilty pleas in 75 to 80% of the cases, don't you?
I'd say we have guilty pleas in more than half of our cases. But what's important to note that is that the people who would be most affected would be people with the longest and most serious criminal records. Those are the men who usually do go to trial because they're facing too much time to plead guilty.
What is the Louisiana system for multiple billing, as your opponent has referred to it? Is it something that has to be alleged in the... Is it an indictment that you proceed by?
We proceed with a bill of information. After a man has been convicted or pled guilty to a felony, we proceed by filing a bill of information alleging that he has been previously convicted of one or more felonies within a statutory time period. Generally speaking, it's 5 years from the time of his last conviction.
And then that's an allegation in the bill that is put in issue by a not guilty plea, I take it.
It's put in issue. What happens is
it comes after conviction.
It's after conviction. The jury doesn't know about the man's prior record.
Right. So this is only for sentencing.
Yes, and it's tried before a judge.
Well, now, would retroactivity here subject a person who was convicted by a unanimous six-man jury to, would it give him the right to attack a prior conviction? Say back to 1921.
It would depend on the scope of a retroactive ruling. I believe it would. That would be a matter, I guess, the Louisiana Supreme Court would take up. And my opinion would be yes, it would.
Conceivably, this court too.
Yes, sir. Eventually and ultimately.
Whether or not there's to be multiple billing is in the discretion of the prosecutor.
Discretion of the district attorney. I believe Mr. Lawrence spoke about since 1974 there have been more multiple bills filed. That's because a new district attorney came into office in 74. Louisiana has had the multiple offender statute since the early 1900s.
It's a matter of prosecutorial policy.
Yes, sir.
Discretion.
Yes, sir.
And then that can be denied, and that's tried before the sentencing judge. Huh?
Yes, sir. There are certain technical requisites of proof that are require the state proving up what's called proving up the prior convictions. Now, as the court has recognized, a retroactive application of this case could yield windfall benefits to a certain number of people who are in jail. Ironically, the retrial of a case now may well result in a verdict which is less reliable than was the original trial held before this court, before the court's decision in Birch. That's when a case can be brought back to trial. Inevitably, the passage of time will destroy the state's chances to bring a lot of these cases back to trial. How many, you can't tell. But again, what's important is that those persons who would be most likely to be unretriable would be those persons whose cases were the stalest. That is, people with the most serious criminal records who were sentenced to the longest terms a good number of years back. Mr. Lawrence initially also brought up in his argument a distinction between retroactivity on direct review and on collateral review, and I'd like to answer that briefly. I think that, first, that the jurisprudence of the court has established that that distinction is without merit. Back to Tahan, X-Rel Schott, soon after the first non-retroactivity decision in Linkletter, that distinction was rejected then. I believe that the countervailing factors, which spoke about earlier in connection with the Stovall decision, don't admit any distinction between cases on direct review and cases on collateral review.
What was the chronology here, Mr. Chester? At the time he was tried, Birch had not been decided.
Did not come out, Your Honor. What happened?
Of course, it hadn't been decided at the time he committed the offense.
Yes, sir. There was a trial. 9 months later, Birch was decided.
And then
he appealed. In a month after the Birch decision, the Louisiana Supreme Court affirmed Darnell Brown's case, holding that Birch versus Louisiana was not retroactive. Petitioner Brown would be on direct review.
Right.
And additionally, I'd submit that I think that the impetus behind the argument for this distinction is basically one of inequity. It's dissatisfaction with what the court has previously termed the chance beneficiary. In other words, why should one man benefit from the court's decision when another man similarly situated does not? I'd suggest that drawing a distinction between cases on collateral review and cases on direct review merely exchanges one inequity for the other, with the side effect of having just that many more convictions reversed for reasons other than unfairness in the original trial.
Was your earlier reference to the inherent inequity related to the inability to show that a polling took place of the jury?
No, sir. This would be more general terms.
Wouldn't that be another basis for chance?
It certainly would. Some persons who, in fact, may have been convicted by non-unanimous juries may not be able to prove that.
And maybe they never knew it.
Exactly. Maybe no one ever knew it except the judge.
The precautions that your friend did.
Perfectly correct, Your Honor. For the
in Louisiana, can you establish such a factor by some collateral process?
Well, there is a rule in the Code of Criminal Procedure which says that jurors are incompetent to impeach their own verdicts. Now, whether that would prevent a situation where a defendant could recall members of the jury to testify as to what their particular ballot was in a case, I'm not sure.
Well, that would be
the practical
impeaching it.
The practical problems inherent in that are widespread.
Overwhelming. Are they
yes,
not
sir.
To call back jurors of 5 or 6 years ago and ask them whether or not a particular verdict was, in the words of the usual polling language, was this your verdict?
Exactly, Your Honor. It'd be analogous to the situation of trying to rediscover state's witnesses in a case that was 5 or 6 or 7 years old. Some of the witnesses or jurors may be dead, they may have moved, they may have forgotten what their vote was. The practical problems are overwhelming in that type of situation. In summary, I'd point out to the court that there has been no showing that a substantial number of these verdicts were wrongly decided, were unfair. The state of Louisiana relied on the law as it stood before the court's decision in Birch, as it was set out in the 74 Constitution. And finally, that if retroactivity were found in the case before the bar, it would have a seriously disruptive impact on Louisiana's criminal law. So it would be time-consuming, it would be expensive, and it would yield unfair results.
Mr. Chester, I noticed at the time you wrote your brief, you didn't have the citation to the U.S. reports of Birch against Louisiana.
No, sir, I did not.
Do you happen to have it now?
Not with me, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I have the advance sheet copy. Thank you, Mr. Chester.
Do you have anything further, Mr. Lawrence?
Chief Justice, I would like to make one point known to the court, and it's not really in the nature of rebuttal, but it is something I feel the court should know, that in 1974, for cases that were tried after 1974, in the year 1974, which were committed in 73, the defendant had his choice to be tried five of five or five of six. So there was a period of time when the defendants did have a choice in there.
Were you defending then?
Yes.
What was your advice, or was it always?
It would depend on the type of case I had. If I had a good case, I might go with a 5-man jury. I had a good defense.
And if you weren't so strong, you would go for that wild card.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And maybe make a pass at a 12-member jury.
If we had that, it'd be even better for us.
I must say that's very revealing.
Well, we thank you for your candor on that. Let me ask you one more question, counsel. What about the point we were just discussing with your friend, that a good many lawyers apparently did not take the precautions you did and poll every jury on a guilty verdict? Now, then, isn't it just a matter of lottery and chance as to which ones would get the benefit of a retroactive holding, should that be the court's decision? That's a pretty chancy business, isn't it?
There are some attorneys who did poll, and in some cases there are records to show the number, but
it'd be a matter of chance.
It would be a matter of chance. That's correct. No.
Contrary. Wouldn't it be the burden on the person alleging to show it?
Yes. That's correct, too.
And if they couldn't show it, they wouldn't get a hearing, would they?
That's right.
Then on what standards in Louisiana, if there are any on this point, would a defense counsel be open to a charge of ineffective assistance of counsel if the record did not show that he polled the jury?
In that case,
that's not a fanciful possible claim, is it, on the part of a defendant who's in prison now?
It could be a claim, ineffective assistance of counsel for not polling the jury if this is decided retroactively.
There's nothing on federal habeas, and you suppose you could poll the jury if they're still alive?
I don't know how to answer that.
Do you know of any Louisiana law that would prevent you?
From polling the jury, if they're able to be found,
yeah.
Well, you find them.
If you can find them, then
you might have to dig some of them up.
You got the jury records, haven't you?
Yes.
Of who they were,
if they're still there, yeah.
Yeah. Well, of course, a lot of them may be dead by now, or moved away, or something. I agree with you. But if they were around, if you even found one of them, you could probably find out if it was unanimous.
I'm sure they would remember the count. Yeah.
We should have a new omnibus judges bill.
Your friend suggested that there's a statute prohibiting collateral attack on the jury verdict by such an inquiry. Wouldn't that preclude any inquiry of any juror? Because certainly the result would be to impeach the verdict. That would be the purpose of the inquiry.
There is a statute that says that the jury is not competent to impeach its own verdict. And I have only seen.
Well, it's not impeaching it. It's just a question of fact.
That's correct too. I've only seen two of those cases, though, in the last 10 years.
If the fact is that it was not unanimous, then the verdict has been impeached.
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments.